This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm really delighted to be joined by best-selling author and owner and CEO of the high-end luxury linen destination in Toronto, the Canadian-owned Olie Linens. And of course, I'm talking about Joanna Goodman. Before we meet her, let me tell you a little bit more about her. Joanna Goodman is the author of 7 novels, including the new instant bestseller, The Inheritance. Here it is. And it's fabulous. And I really loved it. I actually listened to it on Audible. And that was quite a lovely experience. And as well, she is also the author of the number one national bestseller. And this was just, I think this should be made into a movie. It's so fantastic. It's The Home for Unwanted Girls, which was on the Canadian bestseller list for more than 6 months. And as well, we won't be talking about this one as much today, but I encourage you to read it, The Forgotten Daughter, and The Finishing School, also both national bestsellers. Her stories have appeared in The Fiddlehead, B&A Fiction, Event, The New Quarterly, and White Wall Review, as well as excerpted in Elizabeth Harper's fiction anthology, A Room at the Heart of Things. Originally from Montreal, Joanna now lives in Toronto with her husband and her 2 children. And as just mentioned, Joanna is also the owner of the Toronto-based linen store, Olie Linens. And in 1981, Joanna's mother, Peggy Byron, opened Boutique Olie in Montreal, one of the first bed linen shops in Canada to offer pure cotton sheets instead of treated polyester. The store was an instant success with people lining up outside that 700 square foot establishment. Soon Byron expanded the business to include a factory where she manufactured her own collection of linens in Canada. Wow. 15 years later, Byron moved the retail end of the business to Toronto, where she would eventually take over a store almost 10 times the size of that original boutique. Sadly, Joanna's mother, Peggy Byron, passed away in July of 2014. And today, Joanna, who has developed her own passion for design and fine linens, is running the family business along with her husband, Miguel. When they're not in Toronto, they're traveling throughout Europe and the US sourcing the world's finest linens, planning and designing new collections, tweeting, blogging, creating, and changing the way people sleep. And on top of all this, my question is, where does she get the time to write? Joanna, welcome to Finding Your Bliss. So great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. Such an honor.
I know, Joanna, that like Barbra Streisand, one of your favorite rooms in your home is your bedroom, which is not surprising considering that you run Olie Fine Linens, a high-end luxury linen destination in Toronto. And I know that it's also a family-owned business, as we just mentioned, originally founded by your mom, Peggy Byron. And so you inherited this business, as it were. And today, you and your husband, Miguel, are at the helm of the gorgeous physical stores, the one at Yonge and Davisville, and the unbelievable 10,000-foot store, which we're going to talk about soon, and the thriving online boutique as well. And I read that your magnificent Olie linens, and this was from 7 years ago, so I'm not sure if this is still the case, but your silk velvet studded king-size bed and tufted bench grace your bedroom at home. And even though I know you often love to write at various cafes in the city, because I also read that, I wondered if, like Barbra Streisand, who does many things in her bedroom, including eating and working, if you love to do some of your writing there as well. Can you tell us where are some of your favorite places to write?
Ooh, wow. That's a really good question. And I have to say, so that was 7 years ago and it was pre-COVID. And a lot changed in terms of my writing rituals because they had to. And also my kids are much older now. So when they were younger, I literally had to get out of the house to write. So, you know, luxuries like writing in my bed and, you know, sitting in a cozy office at home were not possible. Right. So I did almost all of my writing in coffee shops. Like that was my thing. And I would, you know, if I'm in the middle of a novel, I will kind of work until 2 and then go to a coffee shop. I would at the time go to a coffee shop for the afternoon and, you know, write for a few hours before dinner. Mm-hmm. But during COVID, I had to write at home. I didn't have a choice. And, you know, it was interesting because everyone was home. My kids were home. I was home. And I will say it took about a year of not writing in COVID. I was also at the same time trying to keep the business afloat. So I was like shipping and receiving and doing all that crazy stuff at Olé.
Yes.
But after about a year when we were still in lockdown, I made a decision that like I had to write. And so I would grab a room that was empty and write. And you know, what ended up happening was I kind of got comfortable writing at home. Hmm. And so now that my kids are older, one of them is in university, one of them doesn't leave his basement, I have a lot more free space and time to write at home. And I sort of don't go to the coffee shops anymore.
Wow.
I make my own. I bought myself a nice little espresso machine. And sometimes I write at the kitchen table. Sometimes I write on my couch in front of the fire. And in the summer, I sit in my garden and I write.
Wow,
and
lovely.
I wrote almost the entire summer in my yard. We were very lucky this summer with the weather.
Yes.
It was magnificent. And I have a giant comfy chair that overlooks my garden. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote. So that's kind of like where I'm at this point in my life.
That's fabulous. Do you write for a certain amount of time? Do you give yourself sort of a block of time? Like I'm going to write for 3 hours this afternoon, or how does that work?
Sort of. I try to have an idea in my head of, you know, when I'm going to write in the day. And again, I'm not always working on a novel, although as I look back, I always am. But, you know, I know there are like Mondays and Wednesdays are my crazy work days. I'm at Olé Fine Linens Monday and Wednesday. I almost never write on a busy work day.
Yes.
Tuesdays and Thursdays, I try to schedule my afternoons off. And so I'll typically be like, okay, I'm going to start like at 11 writing and I'll write until I completely poop out. And that really depends on, you know, sometimes I can rework a paragraph for 4 hours. Like it sounds crazy, but I will get one paragraph done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of lose the creative momentum after that afternoon coffee. So like by 5, I'm kind of done. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we'll make dinner and have family time and stuff like that. And if I'm really, really in the grips, like it's pulling me back, I have to get back to it, I will go find a little space and like just
keep going and keep going. That's fabulous. Do you find that one informs the other? Because like most people, it would be enough to be a novelist of 7 novels. Like that would be very full time. And yet here you are, this doyen, this, you know, running this huge, you know, corporation, this beautiful, you know, and it's so beloved. And the reason I actually asked for this interview was because every time I'm in your store, I feel blissful. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to ask, I'm going to give my card to one of the lovely ladies that works there and just, you know, see if this can happen. But I was wondering, does one inform the other, the fact that you have to be there Monday and Wednesday and you have a routine, this almost becomes your catharsis, your release, do the two work hand in hand is really what I'm asking.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And I was thinking a lot about this before today's interview. I love the whole finding your bliss thing, and I always have. And I was thinking about this. I was very, very fortunate because both of my parents really did what they loved. Like yes. My mom was passionate, not just about textiles, but she was an entrepreneur to the core. Wow. So I watched her when I was a little girl open this little store. I watched it take off. I watched her life expand. She was so passionate about it. And, you know, she had some rough times. I mean, she was in Montreal at the time between the referendums, and then there was a terrible recession. And even yes. moving to Toronto was really scary for her. But my God, this woman loved what she did. Wow. And I witnessed that. You know, you don't realize how much something's imprinting on you. Mm-hmm. And my dad was similar. My dad was a passionate athlete. He was a marathon runner, and he built his life around his running and his sports. And like, by that, I mean, he had a day job. He was very successful. He was on the road selling, but he would make sure he was home by lunchtime every single day to go for his run, to go do his 1,000 sit-ups, wow. to do his, like, go play tennis. Like, so I was absorbing, like, it was so normal to me mm-hmm. to create a life around what you love to do. It didn't even seem like it was just what people did. Like, can you imagine?
That's fabulous.
You know, to answer your question, like, I went to school for journalism, actually, because, you know, I had always written stories from the time I was little. Writing was my thing. I just didn't know you could grow up and be a writer as a career. So I just thought it would be something that I always, always did in all my free time. And that's kind of how it was. But I needed a degree. So I did journalism. And I loved my program, but I did not love being a journalist in the real world. Like, I got a job right out of, or I think I was an intern at Reuters.
Reuters, yeah.
And the Gazette. I did a little stint at the Gazette. And yeah. I mean, I hate it. I absolutely hated it. And I felt a little doomed because I had this degree. I didn't know what else you could do as a person who wanted to write. But I did not enjoy going to town halls and covering boring political things and being in scrums and driving all over the city and then writing these really technical.
Yeah.
And I found it really hard to come home from that and write creatively. Like, I just struggled to switch gears out of journalistic writing. Mm-hmm. And so when my mom was opening up the Toronto location, I was just graduating from Carleton. And we didn't want to go back to Montreal. My husband and I, he was my boyfriend at the time because it was post-referendum and it was not a good time in Quebec. Mm-hmm. And so we all decided we would move to Toronto. And I said, I will work at your new store until I find a real job in journalism. Huh. And I had always worked at her stores in the summer, so I knew what to do. And the store in Toronto was just a totally different world than it had been in Montreal. And by that, I mean, there were clients, there were customers. Like, at the end in Montreal, like, someone might walk through the doors twice a week. Like, I'm not exaggerating.
Really?
And from the moment we opened on Mount Pleasant, it just took off. And yes. I loved it. Like, I loved everything. She took me on buying. I remember her taking me to New York. I was in my early 20s and we went to shows and we bought stuff for the new store and, like, I loved it. Wow. And I loved making the beds at the store. I was really good at it. And so I was starting to make all the beds and then we were designing the collections together and making the beds and then I was selling them. Like, and the best part was when I went home at night, also I was young, I could write and write and write and write. And like the creativity, it like fueled and inspired and it was so great. And also my mom was like, if she knew I was working on something, she'd be like, why don't you go home early today and watch? Nice. She was like, always wanted me to be a writer.
Wow.
Knew I would be a writer. So to very long-windedly answer that question, they really do feed off each other. I could not be a writer in isolation 24/7 with, I couldn't do it.
Totally. Yeah.
But also if I wasn't writing in my life, there would be like a void inside me. Wow. I have been writing since I'm 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, I've had the great fortune to be published, but I would be writing no matter what. And really? So when people are like, how do you find the time? I mean, practically speaking, I have an incredible staff. Like managers and leaders. And I really have come to a place where I get to do the stuff I love. I still wow. love the travel, the buying, the designing. Like, that's my jam.
Yes.
And then I go home and write.
And you write. Thank you for that. You know what I found interesting was Carleton journalism. I think you'd be writing nonfiction. And here you are, you've written 7 novels. And I don't know, maybe they had, I went to Ryerson for journalism school. So I wonder, do they have a creative writing course? How did you parlay that? Oh, they did. And that's what piqued your interest.
Well, I loved the journalism program. I had great fun. I mean, I ended up doing a radio documentary as my thesis. And yes. there's so much creative freedom in that. I did my thesis on the French in Louisiana, and it was a radio documentary. Wow. And I went to New Orleans and Louisiana. It was just the most incredible experience. And I did a lot of TV when I was in journalism. And then there was a lot of writing that I did enjoy for journalism where we got to do these longer editorial pieces as we got into like 30
Nice.
Courses. And I loved the people and the teachers, and I loved, I had just, you know, they were the 4 best years of my young life to that point.
So great.
So I did love journalism school.
Yes.
But yes, probably the key thing to come out of my university experience was in 3rd year, I signed on for a creative writing workshop. Mm. It was for credit. And The professor was wonderful, and he immediately just became like a mentor to me. Wow. And encouraged me, and the feedback was incredible. And so in my fourth and final year of journalism, I asked him if I could take the course again just to audit so I could continue creative writing.
Wow.
With him.
Love that.
And he said, yes. So I did it for no credit. But in that year, he started encouraging me to send out my short stories. And he helped me, and he sort of gave me the courage and the confidence to do that. And that's when I started getting short stories accepted.
Wow.
And from there, I started working on my first, it was a little novella. It ended up being published, and
yes,
he nurtured it through that whole year. So I always say, like, my first novel came out of that creative writing workshop.
Isn't that interesting? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I love that.
From there, I was able to get once I had that first little book with a small press, I was able to get an agent, and, you know.
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
That's great. That's so good. So as I just mentioned, I just finished reading your latest book, The Inheritance, and listening to it. I read and listened on Audible. Loved it. Congratulations. It's a glorious read, and I found it very compelling. And I loved all of the references to the era that we grew up in. For instance, I loved the Mother Virginia's library, which is divided into three sections, sexuality, diet, and self-help. I so related to that. And you talked about one of the books in that library, The Sensuous Woman, which I remember reading many years ago. And it was so evocative. It brought back so many fond and funny memories. And as well, I loved all of your references to Toronto and to the game Virginia, the mother, used to play with her children called When We're Millionaires One Day. And how once that happened, they'd be able to buy Barbie camp houses and go to Disney World and Disneyland, and how Virginia would cut photos in magazines of fancy homes. And they were the inspiration for her future, you know, her future and your future as a family, and how Virginia was going to buy them banana seat bicycles. Like, this is just so fun to read, and Corvettes and trampolines, and how Virginia got the idea for all of this out of the book Creative Visualization, which of course was written by Shakti Gawan. How to use the power of your imagination to create what you want in your life. So all that long-winded question to say, Joanna, is that what you've done with the book and with your whole career, as it were, the high-end linen shop and as an author of an incredible 7 novels to date? Did you sort of manifest this fabulous, glamorous reality?
I mean, I believe yes. I mean, I have read the book many times. I love it. I have a very, very rich spiritual life.
Yes.
You know, I'm not sitting down writing mantras and saying them into the mirror. I'm not I've done the odd vision board, but I have always, like I said, I think a lot of this goes back to my parents and what really just imprinted on me, on my psyche, on my soul, on my heart, like that we get to do what we love. Like, I know that when I say it, I feel so guilty, but like, that's all I saw. And so I think definitely, I'll just speak for me. The more I'm doing things that I love and that fill me with joy, it seems to beget more of that.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
And so call it what you will. I don't want people like, the secret, but I do feel like where my head is at, where my mindset is at, where my mood is at, it's not a coincidence. When I'm in a terrible place, terrible things tend to pop up. And when I'm in a really good place, it seems to, you know, generate more good things. And so thankfully my life is really, there's so much stuff I love. Like, I am a person who has followed her bliss. And I say that like, there was no plan, Judy. There was no plan. I had no plan. When I said, I'll work at your store, Mom, I had no plan. I wasn't thinking books and I'm going to publish by this. And I was kind of just, oh, this is so fun. And I get to write.
Wow.
And that's super. Kind of how it's been for the past, 20 years.
You created such an incredible blueprint for your life. We're going to go on a short commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk all about Joanna Goodman's latest novel, The Inheritance. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And I'm here with the CEO and owner of Olee Fine Linens and seven-time author, Joanna Goodman. And now we're going to talk about Joanna's latest book, The Inheritance. But first, I want to give a quick shout out to our incredible segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. Thank you to Ashford Cleaners for sponsoring this segment of Finding Your Bliss. Ashford Cleaners is Toronto's best dry cleaner with hand-finished detailing, laundry, tailoring, you name it, and they'll take care of it while always going the extra mile to make sure you leave with a smile on your face. And they also offer you free pickup and delivery, so it's easy to keep your entire closet ship shape and ready to go. Thanks, Ashford. I want to just ask you, Joanne, if you can tell us more about your brainchild, The Inheritance, which of course is the story of a mother and daughter fighting to claim an inheritance and how changes in the legal system help revive their case. Can you tell us more about what gave you the inspiration to write this book?
Yeah, the more I tour with each book, I started to see that like every book I write is about a mother and a daughter.
Yes.
So, including the one I'm working on now. But actually, I had the inspiration for this book years and years and years ago. So I had read Bleak House by Charles Dickens, and I absolutely loved it. I loved the idea of this entire family over generations waiting and waiting and waiting for this inheritance to change their lives. Mm-hmm. And for me, what really resonated was that idea of when I lose 10 pounds, when I win the lottery, when yes. I get my first book published, when I have the two kids, I'm sure it's a man thing too, but I sure know it's a woman thing, right? It's always as soon as, like living kind of for the moment when all the things can be checked off the boxes. And so I love the idea of this inheritance case that dragged on for decades and decades and decades and decades. And really, it was all these lives on hold that never went anywhere. And I kind of loved that. And so I started doing research on what kind of a inheritance case in modern day could drag on for decades.
Yeah.
And I decided to, I think what had happened was I had requested a bunch of legal cases, inheritance cases, and there were some really fascinating ones that came from New York. And I think I decided to set the legal drama in New York. Mm-hmm. And I went to New York and I went to the surrogate court and I walked the whole Lower East Side and I did so much research. And I, again, had so many transcripts and I sort of sat on them for a few years. Mm. I didn't quite have the story and I was very much going back and forth with the Home for Unwanted Girls.
Yes.
And then when I was going to go to the inheritance, my editor at HarperCollins asked me if I would consider doing a sequel to Home for Unwanted Girls.
Which was this.
Yes. Which was The Forgotten Daughter. And you know, it's funny because I had so much research that didn't get used in Home for Unwanted Girls because in the end, what I thought would span to the present day felt more organically to end where it ended in the early 70s. And so all the research I had from the 90s wow. and the 2000s, all my writing from my journalism era, which I have, I sort of had in a box and like was like, oh, well. And then so when my editor said, like, would you consider writing a sequel? I was like, oh, my God, yes. How did I not think about
that? Wow. Manna from heaven, right?
Yeah. So that was it took me 1 year to write and it was like all there. And then I went back to The Inheritance, which was like kind of like my modern day Bleak House. And I just love the idea of exploring that theme of, you know, how we kind of bypass our lives living for something in the future.
Yes.
And like just struggle to stay present and see what we have in front of us and be with it. Like, this is something you know.
What is good right now? It's positive psychology. It's not what is wrong in the relationship or what is wrong in life. What's working? What's good? Starting from there.
Yeah. Now, of course, if I had an opportunity to possibly inherit, you know, $30 million, that would be hard to walk away from. I get it. But yeah, I love the idea also of the generational cycle of how, you know, history repeats itself. And
yes,
you know, Arden finds herself living her mother's life 30 years later.
Yes.
And I mean, I can really relate to that. I'm like living my, aside from the writing part, like I'm living her life.
Wow.
And my husband, like my stepdad worked in the company. They traveled together. Now, you know, she brought me, maybe one day I'll bring my daughter. Who knows?
I love the relationship between Virginia and Arden, mother of three, widowed in her 30s, the similarities between the two. And without giving away the ending, there is such a poignant moment where Virginia looks at her daughter in awe, not only at her beauty, but she's in wonderment of how she actually helped to create such an incredible human being. And I love where Arden takes off and just has a different spin on all of it, that she has the love, the wherewithal, the whatever it is in her, partly because of Virginia, partly because of herself. And I so related to that. I found that so powerful. And I couldn't help thinking about my beautiful daughter, Lily, who does live in New York, who's a musical theater actor. And I thought that many mothers might have a very similar feeling about that lovely moment in the book. And I also know that you started out wanting to write about your beloved mother's life. That has been a through line for you, hasn't it?
Oh, it's so bizarre. I just, always.
Always. And I know you had a very close relationship with your beloved late mother. You write that she was your children's nanny when you were at work. And your mother also had a very close relationship with your own daughter. And I just want to say, I'm so sorry. I know she passed away 11 years ago, but it's like, I know when it's a love like that, sometimes it feels like it's just happened.
Yeah.
Is there something about the mother-daughter relationship that you love exploring? Because it feels like you are working through this relationship in all of your, or is it just something that you know and love?
Oh, we probably need 3-4 more hours.
Right.
Possibly a therapist. I had such an intense relationship with my mom. Yeah. And it was so close, so close. I am an only child. My mom had 7 miscarriages.
Wow.
And she had me in the middle of them all. And so I was her world for the first, before she started her business, so for the first 10, 12 years of her life, I was her world. And she was so loving and she was the most wonderful mother ever. So we were so close. And then when she opened the business, you know, I had to adjust to not having her there. And when I say she was passionate, it could be argued she was a workaholic, right? Like, and then I sometimes think if I were a therapist studying me, I think there would be a little bit of why I loved working at Olé. It's because I got to have my mom. We were together all the time. She was my favorite human. And it was kind of the only way I could have her. A lot.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so, you know, traveling with her, we used to go to Paris and New York and Germany. And I mean, I just loved it so much.
Yes.
And so she was a big part of that. But I will tell you, as I started to want more independence and autonomy in the business, we did start to butt heads a little bit. And so we had some rocky years, but at the same time, I had my daughter and they were so close.
Hmm.
So it was, and then we all had this house in Maine for years where every summer we would be all together.
Awesome.
So what I'm trying to say is it's so complicated. I have so many feelings about our relationship and about how similar I am to her, but also how different, about how close we were and also how there was some pain there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a daughter. And I'm always just exploring that.
Dynamic.
It was not just her. It was also like her and her mother had a complete. So like, I just feel fascinated with the generation, women and the generations of women and what we pass on and mothering, period.
Of course.
And mothering when you're also navigating a career Like, yes. These are things that, I mean, I'll probably write about for the rest of my life.
The rest of your life. You know, when you were talking about wanting to be in the store just to be close to your mother, I thought about Maggie in the home for unwanted girls wanting to be with her father in the seed shop, in the Superior seed shop, just to be close to him. And so that just resonated right away. I really felt that.
That was my mom's actual experience. My grandfather had a seed store. Wow. He was called the seed man in the neighborhood, and she worked for him weighing seeds. So that all was true. Yeah. And that's where she fell in love with business.
Wow. And became, right? And that's where it's so cool. And I want to say that the first time that you wrote a book without your mother was during COVID. And that was The Inheritance. What was that like for you? Because she had been there for the other six books, right? Cheering you on. And
she passed away before Home for Unwanted Girls.
Right.
So I had been working on it my whole life. I started working on it in college.
Wow.
And again, when I say working on it, I always knew I wanted to write that story about her growing up half French and half English in Quebec.
Yes.
But I didn't come across the orphan part of it until years later when I was researching. So it sort of had a premise and a setting, but it never had a motor. And so I would sort of put it aside. And I did write other novels and, you know, finishing school came out. And when I did come across the Du Plessis orphan story, that's when
awful.
I knew that
story.
I was going to put that in the book. That was going to be what it was about. And she had passed away by then. So she read so many versions, but she never read the version that was published.
Yes.
But I always felt like she was up there orchestrating, because it kind of took off in a way that was sort of weird and unexpected, especially in the States. Like, the weirdest part was in the States, but they loved it. And because when my editor, I'm at HarperCollins in New York, asked me if I had anything to follow up the finishing school, I'm like, I do, but it's very like Quebecish and very, you know, and she was like, oh, that sounds so cool.
Great.
So my mom was not around for anything after, not even finishing school. It came out in 2017. So I don't even think she would have read that.
The Inheritance it's a beautiful book. It's a page turner. I love the characters, as I mentioned. I even love, so not just Virginia and Arden, but I also love the older sister, Tate, you know, who's a journalist and writes for these home magazines. Like, I picture her being the editor of Style at Home or House and Garden. And there are so many funny moments and great references, as I mentioned, where we recognize the landmarks and certain streets and establishments in Toronto. That's so fun. And then there's that scene. And I have to ask you about the disturbing scene in The Inheritance where Virginia is sexually assaulted, and it's pretty graphic. It was really hard to read because it was so real. And I wonder if it was hard and disturbing for you to write.
I mean, it was for sure. But I will say, though, having done, you know, years and years of research on the Du Plessis orphans and what happened to them, this didn't... I don't want to belittle it by any stretch, but there's a certain, like, I'm kind of used to being in that dark place when I'm doing research of that kind. And I sort of know how to ease myself out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But those parts are always hard to write about. But I really wanted to write about it because it's something that you don't hear about often, mm-hmm. is elderly women being, I mean, in this case, sexually assaulted, but elder abuse, all of that. It felt like an underexplored conversation. And, you know, women are often sort of held accountable for their choices of what leads them into those moments. And I think that is certainly true of Virginia. Like, she made a lot of poor choices and finds herself berating herself for, you know, so to me, that felt like a very common theme for women who are in those situations. And I wanted to explore it in someone who was older.
Yeah, it's great. I think our audience can really appreciate this. The elder abuse group, the group that met to talk about how they were abused. Like, there are people out there that have never felt there's a place to go to and to turn to. And it is so incredible that you address that. And I just wondered if that was so hard to do it. But I will tell the reader, without giving away the book, that I was very relieved when Virginia confronts the man years later while he's out with his wife, using, of course, a pseudonym. He didn't use the real name. And she files a police report. He's charged. That was very satisfying to discover. Did that feel like justice for you as the author? Like, do you kind of go, yay, when you're at your laptop or however you write? Because it really did for the reader that moment.
Yeah, that's the beauty of being a writer, right?
Yeah. I get to
vengeance that maybe a 65-year-old woman wouldn't have actually gotten in real life.
Right. I also love the character, Mrs. K, the seamstress who cared for Tate, Virginia's daughter, who grows up to be an editor, as I mentioned, at the Home Decor magazine. And I imagine Tate creating many of the photo shoots and layouts of the beautiful furniture. I thought about my sister-in-law, Tara Fingold, actually. Is that funny? Is that a small world? I love her.
And my house.
I know. And so the layouts of the beautiful furniture and the decor and the candles and the soaps and diffusers and gorgeous linen. So I just really could picture that. And I loved reading how Tate loved those afternoons listening to the soothing whir of the sewing machine while they watched game shows like The Price is Right, Hollywood Squares, and the $20,000 Pyramid. Like, that was fabulous. While Virginia, the mother, was at work. This allowed Virginia to work. And I just love those references. Where do you dream up these characters? Are they based on real life or do you create them from your imagination? And was there a specific inspiration for Mrs. K? I love Mrs. K.
Well, interestingly, when I was that young, my mom was the one sewing. My mom loved to sew. She used to sew pom-poms on curtains. She used to make curtains and she was always sewing something for the house, a slipcover, a tablecloth. I mean, it's not hard to see where she was going. And so I remember those times at home with that sewing machine going, and it was my mom. And I mean, that's what I remember being on the TV. Also, her soap operas were, I just loved being home when she was home doing mom things.
Yeah.
It was like my safe place. It was just like such my happy place to come home from school, toss my school bag. My mom would make me a tuna sandwich in front of Sesame Street. It's just
fabulous. Fabulous.
So yeah, I think all my characters have a little bit of every woman I know and for sure a little bit of me, you know?
Yeah. I loved your 1980s reference to Virginia dressing like Diane Keaton on her first rendezvous with her boss, Wallace Ashworth. And I love that you included the reference to this icon. And I have to tell you that her passing, Diane Keaton, has kind of killed me. Have you always been a fan and admirer of the late award-winning film actress and director, Diane Keaton? You mentioned her.
I have to admit, and I really struggle with this because, well, for obvious reasons, but like, I think my favorite movie ever of all time is Annie Hall. I mean, my husband and I went through this and we were young too. We were like in our 20s or maybe early 30s where we went on a like huge Woody Allen, that
Sleeper.
Era. Sisters, you know, Manhattan, Crimes and Misdemeanors, and Annie Hall. And like, I just loved her. I loved the movie. So, you know, I can't say that I, you know, followed all her movies into the present, but all that movies has always been. I can watch it a thousand times.
I know. It's so great. La-dee-dee, la-dee-da, la-la-la. So good. I don't know about you, but I miss Diane Keaton so much. I keep rewatching all of her films. We've truly lost a legend and someone who just felt like a best friend and the girl next door to all of us. She will be greatly missed. Rest in peace, Diane Keaton. We're going to go on a short commercial break. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Joanna Goodman about her writing process and her novel, The Home for Unwanted Girls. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. And we are back with seven-time author and owner and CEO of Oli Fine Linens, Joanna Goodman. So, Joanna, I want to talk to you more about your writing process, because I know there's many budding, aspiring people who are salivating, who would love to have a modicum of your career. And so I'm wondering, has your writing process changed from the time you wrote your first book, Belle of the Bayou, to The Inheritance? What's different now?
I mean, God, yeah. First of all, when I was young, I would write all night, every night till 2-3 in the morning. I loved writing all night long. Like now, you know, past 9.
It's done. Bedtime.
Nothing happening up here. It's done. So I can't write at night anymore. So that was where a lot of my writing happened. But I mean, you know, it involves children had a real impact. Like when they were little, it was much harder to write. I'm finding now so my daughter's in university and my son's 16 and again, never leaves the basement. There's not a lot, because it's new, right? Like my husband and I look at each other and we're like, what is this? So much time.
Yes.
And so I've had a lot more time for writing, which has been lovely. Mm-hmm. It has been really lovely. And, you know, I still am obsessed with my business.
Of course.
I never want to not be a part of this. I can't imagine walking away from it. But I definitely see as I'm getting older that I would like more writing time than daily business stuff where I'm in it all day doing the daily grind. I would rather be writing.
Right, right.
So I'm still extremely young.
You are.
Retiring, like I'm not there, but I definitely feel the call to spend more time, like on a retreat, you know, like going to, I went to every year in the fall, I go for 5 days with a writer friend and we just write for 5 days at a, you know, beautiful resort somewhere, wherever.
Glorious.
And I'm doing that again. And like, that's just the happiest place for me right now. So I would like to add more of that. And that's very different from where I was 10 years ago.
Sure.
For sure. Writing.
Do you write it all longhand in a journal or is it all on a computer?
You know, when I get stuck, I will take a notepad and leave the computer and go sit somewhere and just scribble it to get it to, you
out
know.
There.
Yeah. And then I'll go back. But not that often. Not that often. Wow. It's mostly computer.
Do you face the page, like the blank page, with excitement and anticipation? Do you ever get anxious? But like I say this, I'm a writer. I've written a couple of books. I'm trying to write my new book on Finding Your Bliss, which of course is so important to me because I really want to impart to people how they can do it, how others have done it, and really give them actionable, you know, steps and ideas on how to. So it's harder. And I tremble a little bit when I'm in front of the computer. Are you ever like that? Or are you just sort of like, go guns a-blazing?
I wouldn't say tremble a bit. I'm never afraid of, you know, in fact, I would say I spend most of my life just desperate to get back to whatever it is I'm writing.
Wow.
But listen, there are times where it's just not happening. Like it is not happening. I'm sitting there, I'm, you know, staring at a sentence that I'm reworking for 8 hours and I can't. And then I'll maybe stay away from the computer for a week sometimes.
Yeah. Wow.
And then it's a challenge to get back and it's like climbing a mountain, but then I can't live without it's
yeah. It's love. Like, I know it's everything. It's
can't live without it, but then I'm doing it and it's like,
it's great. It's so great.
Love it.
Any tips for aspiring writers out there who are listening, who maybe of any age and just want to write something, want to write the great Canadian novel or anything? at all, even a short story?
I mean, not to be cliche, but write. Just write. Lots of people, it doesn't have to be starting with the great American Canadian novel. And then one thing that was imparted to me by that professor was write short stories and submit them. That is a baby step that, you know, because I'd had a bunch of stories published, the editor at this small press, which was Porcupine Squill, was open to reading because I had established some credibility. I'd also worked in journalism and had a lot of stories published through Reuters and in the Gazette, and all of that was in, you know, in my cover letter. So it's really about, you know, writing always and sending and submitting and being rejected and doing it again. And I'll never forget that first acceptance letter when I was still in university to the first literary magazine. My boyfriend, now husband, we both started bawling. I'd had so many rejections. And then once I had that one, the next one was accepted. The next one was accepted. And then, you know, every little thing opens a door. And then the little tiny press led to an agent. And then the agent sold the first book to Penguin.
That touches my heart so much, what you just said, that you both were bawling together. The sign of a beautiful relationship, that he cared as much as you did and was excited and passionate about it.
Yeah. And he was like 21, right? It's crazy.
I mean, wow. That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. Do you love doing research? I know you did a tremendous amount of research for The Home for Unwanted Girls and for The Forgotten Daughter. Do you love doing research? Is that sort of fun for you?
Love is a very strong word. Definitely, I go down rabbit holes when I'm interested. So like if I, you know, the Du Plessis Orphan was an absolute rabbit hole. It was as horrifying as it was, it was also, I could not stop. And I couldn't, you know, so I was, I don't want to say I loved it, but I was definitely compelled and like very compulsively researching for years and years and years.
Wow.
And look, it's an integral part of a good book. I feel like it has to be, the knowledge has to be natural and come off easy and seamless. So it's really important. And even for The Inheritance, I had to reach out to an inheritance lawyer in New York.
Wow.
And that's not my favorite thing to do. Like, hi, can you? But I did it and he read the book and he gave me his feedback and it was fantastic. So the payoff is huge.
Yes, absolutely. And
it's non-negotiable.
I also love, you said something that's really reminded me of what I sometimes do in these interviews, which is sometimes I know that I'm looking for an element that might make the interview soar and that it's not there yet. I remember feeling that way with Julie Black, the wonderful R&B artist. And I figured it out at 2:30 in the morning and it did make the interview soar. You always go that extra mile. And so I loved reading that you've experienced the same thing. And you write, quote, "The story I wanted to tell was my mom's growing up. She grew up French and half English in the 50s in the Du Plessis era. I knew my experience growing up in the 80s and 90s, but her experience was more intense," you say, referring to the political and religious tensions of the day. "But despite having a backdrop, a setting and characters, it was missing something and you knew it and you had to figure out what it was missing. And that missing piece came from a mentor of yours, Billy Murnett, an LA-based screenwriter who suggests that you take readers on a journey into the orphanage where Elodie, the estranged daughter of Maggie, is confined. This is because Maggie was forced to give up her child by her parents when she became pregnant at 15. What was it like for you as the author when you found that character, Elodie? Did the book practically write itself at that point?
Yeah. Where I was at, so Billy, I wish I had more time to tell this story, but I did a screenwriting course in LA and he was the teacher and we had a great rapport. I ended up going back, theme in my life, and asking him if he would continue reading my novels, even though we began as screenwriting. So he's been my editor for every book I've written since finishing school. So in the original Home for Unwanted Girls, Elodie is given up and given away to the orphanages, but we never see or meet her. So it happens, but we don't go there at all. And he said, like, when you mentioned that, what happened, that they turned all these orphanages into asylums and turned these orphans into mental patients. He's like, I had chills all up and down my body. He goes, you must introduce, like, this is what we need to see.
Yes.
He's like, you've got to go in and put in a half a dozen more chapters. So as soon as he said it, like as a writer, my heart just sank and also soared because A, I knew 100% that that's what had to happen. And I was doing everything in my power not to have to do it.
Wow.
But also, I just knew that that was this, like, I knew. I was so scared, though. I was so scared to misrepresent, to, you know, get it wrong, to also dig into it and read about it and write about it. I didn't feel like I could do it.
Sure.
But I did it.
But you did it. And what a lovely character. I mean, this has to be a film. Are there talk? I'm sure there's been talk.
It's optioned. It is optioned by a Canadian producer.
Wow.
And, you know.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
I love that. Let's talk about Oli Linens for a moment. This is how it all started for me. I mentioned that I walked into your store, felt that beautiful sense of bliss that I feel every time I'm not just talking about Young and Davisville. I'm not even talking about the store on Tycos, which is 10,000 square feet and crazy. And so now you've got this flagship store in Toronto, 147 Tycos Drive, which is roughly 10,000 square feet, light-filled showroom with clear, well-delineated departments. It's just beautiful. The store is designed to inspire. You'll find about 40 styled beds on display, letting customers see how linens look when they're all dressed up and ready to go, which you're very good at, now I've learned. And you also include all of these interactive features, such as a thread count bar, so cool, which helps educate customers on how different fabrics and weaves feel and perform. I love all this. We're going to have to do a part two when your next book comes out, definitely.
For sure.
You mentioned that you're working on a new book. Can you give us a little sneak peek?
Shockingly, it's about a mother and a daughter. it'll be great for the next one because it'll tie in the business. It is about a family business, woman founded, passed over three generations of women. And, you know, not just the passion for the business, but the fighting over it. It's kind of like Succession meets Little Women.
I love that. I love that.
There are hints of autobiography, of course, but yeah.
There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, I'm going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Joanna Goodman?
This weekend was bliss. This past Thanksgiving weekend was bliss. I had my two kids and partners, house full of kids, and then their friends came because they're all back from university. And I was in the den with the fire writing.
Lovely.
That's bliss. That's bliss.
I love that.
For me. That it's that simple. Like,
I love
and
that.
It just, it, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was in Ellora doing relationship building with a couple of hotels out there for the business. And it was, that was bliss. Like just, so, you know, I would say if I had to like sum it all up, you know, it's the writing, it's my career and it's my family.
Of course.
And when they're all flowing together, which is quite often, it's bliss. It really is.
I get that. It's really been an honor to talk to you, Joanna, today. I've really loved every minute of it. And I thank you.
Thank you.
Don't go anywhere yet. What is the best way for people to contact you and connect with you on social media? How can people find you and connect with you in the store and all of it?
I would say for my writing, it's Jo Goodman Author. That's the only social media I have left. And Oli, sadly, will be moving out of the Midtown location and consolidating. The reason we got Tycos is because they are tearing down our beloved building to make condos. So we will, so come on over to 147 Tycos Drive.
We will for sure.
I'm signing books all the time. You can get them at the front counter.
I love that. Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Joanna Goodman who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singers, songwriters, and musicians on this show. So if you're a singer, please reach out to us. Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature? Write to us at fyb@findyourbliss.com. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I help you get unstuck, gain clarity, and find your passion and purpose. Write to us. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. All you have to do is search up Judy Liebrach. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. In Bliss News, we're so excited to announce our luxurious and beautiful Relax and Read giveaway, thanks to Joanna Goodman and Oli Fine Linens. One lucky winner will take home a $200 prize pack, including one Oli Dark Silver 100% silk sleep mask made in Canada, one peaceful sleep spray mist made in France exclusively for Olé Linens, one peaceful sleep bath salts made in France as well exclusively for Olé Linens, one pair of easy living 100% washed cotton sateen white pillowcases made in Portugal, one copy of the latest book, The Inheritance, by Joanna Goodman, signed by the author herself. Entering is easy. All you have to do is visit at the Bliss Minute on Instagram, like and save our giveaway post, tag two friends in the comments, and make sure you're following at the Bliss Minute and at Olé Fine Linens, and I'll spell that for you. That's AULITLINENS. The contest closes Tuesday, November 4th at 6 p.m. EST, and the winner will be announced on our Instagram page on Wednesday, November the 5th. So excited for one lucky listener to win this lovely and luxurious giveaway. Courtesy and thanks to Olé Linens. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Joanna Goodman, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Chelsea Lockstedt, Eva Shabbatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannizziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our official sponsor, the Create Fertility Center, as well to our segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. And also, thank you to Garrett Florist, our studio florist, for the beautiful pink roses that adorn our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Lee Brack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.